Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootniblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, I'm going to go over the most puzzling players league-wide as submitted by the Apples and Genos Discord server. Let's get it. All right, welcome in, everybody. Leave me some comments. I see these people in here. Leave me some comments. Let's get this thing rolling here tonight. Good to see some eyeballs in here. I've been having some weird mic things going on, so let me know if the mic is acting up. I've got a few more levers I can pull if there's something going on, but I think I got it sorted out. We are going to get into some puzzling players, as you already know, as you can already see if you're watching over on YouTube, watching the live stream here. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting things. We might do a little scoreboard watching. We got only two games tonight, and everybody's got a piece of these teams with how few off nights there are in the NHL this week. Everybody's got a little piece of these two games, so everybody's going to be watching these games going on for sure. My opponent in one of my playoff matchups picked up David Riddick, I assume, thinking hopefully that he would get the start against Vancouver, and then Talbot got announced. This is fantastic stuff. You absolutely love to see it. We got Toronto Dave in here, hashtag Zero G. Good to see you, buddy. New Feeds is in here as always. Nate, you're a beauty. That's all. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your service. Laura's in here. My first live episode. Love your quantitative work. I appreciate that somebody appreciates the quantitative work. Not many do, but we got 24 people in here already, and I assume we'll fill up. So good to see all of you. Good to see some people appreciating some quantitative work as well. All right, let's not waste any more time. Let's dive right in with the first and most requested player in the Apples and Geos Discord server, Andrei Svechnikov. 2 assists his last 5 games. It's not been ideal for Svechnikov. What seems to have been Jake Guentzel's gain has been Andrei Svechnikov's loss in some ways. His minutes have come down in the last game against Toronto on Sunday. He played just 14:38. He did have 5 shots in that game, so that's obviously good, but he hasn't scored a goal in 6 straight, and he's only got 2 assists in that time frame. 16 minutes, 20 seconds average time on ice, somewhere in that range over the last 5 games here. 59th in shots per 60, pretty solid. 100th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 31st Corsi 4 per 60, 123 in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. On the season now, pacing for 27 goals, 74 points. I feel like that's probably not that far off from where I had Svechnikov, probably with a few more goals and a few less assists, but the point total seems about right. Look at that, Corsi 4 on the season, 9th overall. Pretty good stuff from Svechnikov, and he has the 69% IPP, which is pretty nice. 13.8% shooting percentage, 11.8% on ice shooting percentage. None of this seems too crazy for Svechnikov. Overall, I'm kind of inclined to think that this is a player that he is. Obviously, I think what people are really after is, should we expect something different from Svechnikov now that we have Jake Guentzel in town, and Evgeny Kuznetsov for that matter? They've moved their lines around. As of the last game, Guentzel was on the line with Aho and Jarvis, and Svechnikov was with Kuznetsov and Nichas. Svechnikov still on the top power play with Guentzel, Aho, and Jarvis up front. Overall, I think that, you know, the shots are still there. The on-ice numbers look solid. It's just kind of a cold stretch for Svechnikov, obviously not coming at a great time. It's not when we would want this to happen for a guy like Andrei Svechnikov in the middle of our fantasy playoffs. There's maybe a case where you might bench Svechnikov if you have a really strong team. But overall, I'm not that concerned. The underlying metrics are solid. It's fair to say that maybe we expect a little bit less. Like on the season, he's, for most of the season even, I would say he's been pacing for about a point per game, and obviously that's fallen off in the last little bit here. So maybe somewhere in this 70 point range is the new point pace that we should consider. I think that's a fair assessment to make, that Guentzel might hurt him overall. Just by virtue of taking perhaps a few minutes away from him that he might otherwise get, perhaps taking away some of that Sebastian Aho exposure that he might otherwise get. Overall, I think Svechnikov is still a great player and one that you're going to be happy to have on your roster through the fantasy playoffs. All right, we got to get back to some comments. Agent Orange, what up, Nate? Much love from Canada. Toronto Dave throwing up the Canada flag. And Agent Orange, as an owner of both Svech and Guentzel, it's been a confusing time. That would be to say the least. What you really hope doesn't happen is that they kind of cannibalize each other and you end up with neither of them performing super well. Hopefully it's just one and then the other at the very least. But yeah, hopefully that works out for you for sure. FF Tyler O, hey Nate, big fan of the work. Martin Lapointe, worth a stash. Yes, obviously. Martin Lapointe, one of the great... What I'm curious now, I'm going to have to Google this, because Martin Lapointe, I have a feeling, had a couple of 20-goal seasons in him back in the day. Martin Lapointe, let's check out some career stats for Martin Lapointe. He had... Oh, it was only one. He had one 27-goal season... 27 goals, 57 points, 127 penalty minutes for the Detroit Red Wings back in 2000-2001. What an absolute beauty Martin Lapointe must have been for you, Tyler, back in the day. Jordan's in here as well. Hey, Nate, what's your outlook on Jarvis now that he's line one with Aho Guentzel? Honestly, I don't think it changes all that much. I guess I would probably say that Guentzel is a slightly better offensive talent than Svechnikov, but it's very close. So overall, I don't think it's a big change for Jarvis, other than, you know, like Jarvis's deployment throughout much of the season has been on the top line with Aho and with Svechnikov for a good chunk of it. So to move to Jarvis, from Svechnikov over to Guentzel, is not really moving the needle in a significant way. Obviously, Carolina moves the lines around, so Jarvis has been off that line and now he's back on that line. So being on the top line with Aho and Guentzel is obviously a great place to be. I think that you can expect pretty solid stuff from Seth Jarvis overall. We can throw him in the sheet here and get a look at his recent numbers. They're solid, not spectacular, but he's been skating over 20 minutes a night and obviously has 5 goals in his last 5 games, which is what you want to see. So I think that that's pretty good stuff for Seth Jarvis, obviously. I think you're happy to have him. He's hot right now, hot at a good time in the fantasy playoffs. You're going to love it. That's my take on Seth Jarvis. I do think like he's not a guy I'm considering dropping right now, just given how hot he's been and how well it seems to be working out at the moment. Victor Arvidsson was hotly requested as well. He obviously hasn't been playing a whole ton of games as of late, but the Sheets got him with 2 goals and or 2 points rather in his last couple of games here. I can pull up an actual game log to look back a little bit more closely. He had 5 shots in the one game, 1 shot in the other game. He had his goal and assist in that 6-0 win against Minnesota, and then nothing in 7-18 against Tampa Bay. Yeah, I think that's probably a relatively unsurprising thing for any LA player. They seem to just kind of have great games, and then it'll be another line that goes off in the next game, and they just kind of trade things around. And I think that's probably what I would expect overall. I don't really see much reason for them to change a whole lot. He was on the Dubois and Laferriere line in the last game. Had a decent amount of even strength exposure there, and then also was on the top power play unit, the Kopitar Fiala Kempe unit, in place of Quentin Byfield. So that makes him an interesting play from that perspective. Obviously, we've got the shots ranks here, but it's just 2 games. It's obviously a little bit hard to draw too much from that small of a sample size, but it's nice that he had at least the 1 5-shot game in there, showing he's definitely still capable of all that. I do like Arvidsson as, you know, a stream for the night, but are you hanging on to him really beyond tonight? You know, looking ahead, we talked a little bit about this, Blake and I, about what we're doing with some of these players beyond this Monday off night that LA has here against Vancouver tonight. But yeah, they've got Edmonton on Thursday. They've got Calgary on Saturday, both extremely heavy nights. I don't know if Arvidsson is really going to crack your starting lineup through there. Then next week, they've got four games being played, and they're on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. Next week is a much better streaming schedule. Even the Saturday heavy night, I believe it's only 11 games played on the Saturday night, and that's the heaviest night of the week. So there's a pretty solid chance that you're actually getting all four games out of Arvidsson next week. But I still don't know if that makes it worthwhile hanging on to him if there are legitimate options to be had. Like, I would definitely drop Arvidsson in most setups for, like, Jordan Greenway, for example, from Buffalo, even though that's a pretty big stretch to say that he's going to have a massive impact. At least he's going to have some impact, whereas Arvidsson is not going to have any if he's just warming your bench on those two heavy nights later this week. So that's my take. I don't think Arvidsson is a player that you have to hang on to just because LA has four games next week. There are a lot of teams that have four games next week that you could move on to from Arvidsson. So that's my take there. Ed Angler says, is Erik Karlsson a hold? We can take a quick look at Erik Karlsson and his stats. He's got just one assist in his last five games, still getting lots of deployment, almost 25 minutes a night. Fourth amongst all defensemen, shots per 60, 18th individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 5th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 7th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60, pacing for 54 points on the season. This has really just been a microcosm of Karlsson's season so far. Underlying numbers looking really good. 47% IPP, which is respectable, but not as good as you would think for a player of Karlsson's caliber. 4.5% shooting percentage, very low for a guy of Karlsson's talents. And the 8.9% on ice shooting percentage, just atrocious. I don't think I need to explain to anyone how Pittsburgh's season has gone this year. The underlying numbers looking really good, but it's hard for me to hold out a ton of hope for Karlsson. That being said, I really do question who you're going to pick up, who's going to be all that much better. Yeah, if you can give me an idea of who might be available in your league that you would want to pick up, maybe I can tell you if I do think that's worthwhile. Pittsburgh, again, one of these teams that has four games next week. A lot of teams do, but Pittsburgh does have four games next week. This week they do have the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, three games, no off nights schedule, but two of those are against Columbus, so you think they might be able to get some points there, some goals on the board anyway. Overall, I think it's hard to find somebody who's a better bet for points than Erik Karlsson just sitting out there in the waiver wire that you're actually going to get games played from. Most likely, you're probably looking at a defenseman to replace Karlsson and his games played, and I significantly doubt that there's somebody out there who's going to be an upgrade on Karlsson. Maybe in like a Bangers Cats, you could just change Karlsson into like an all-out Bangers guy and just try to win your hits and blocks categories or something like that. That might be a scenario that you might consider if there is somebody compelling who could do that for you, but Karlsson, I just don't know who's out there that's actually a better bet for scoring some points for you this week than Erik Karlsson is. So that's my take there. Let's move back into the list. Let's talk about the other Pittsburgh defenseman, Chris Letang. He's got two assists his last five, also skating just under 25 minutes a night. His underlying metrics, not nearly as good. 75th shots per 60, 110 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 74th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 60th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. On pace for 9 goals, 48 points, pretty similar numbers to Karlsson, actually. 46% IPP, 5.6% shooting percentage, 9.4% on-ice shooting percentage. All of that looks pretty normal. Like, I think this is a 50-point player, 50-point defenseman. Pittsburgh in general is cold. You would have a legitimate worry with any Pittsburgh player right now that they're just kind of throwing in the towel and it's going to be hard for them to get motivated about this season, what's left of this season for them, and that they might just kind of coast this one out. That's a very real possibility for a great number of Penguins players. So that is concerning. But again, like, even like talking about with Carlson that you might move to somebody who's a bangers player. Chris Letang is a bangers guy, right? He's one of those guys who will throw the body around and get you some of those peripheral categories and help you out even when he's not scoring points. So that part, I don't think you're gaining a huge advantage by moving off. And he's still a guy who's skating 25 minutes a night. Who are you going to find who's skating this kind of deployment and is scoring at a 50-point pace on the season? I don't know that there's many of those guys out there that you're actually going to be able to fit into your lineup this week. So I feel like Chris Letang is most likely a hold unless, you know, you're just completely stacked at the position and he's going to be your fifth guy and on your bench for all the heavy nights this week. Richard asks, have a bye this week in a Bangers Cats, add Zuccarello for next week, would be dropping Schmaltz or McTavish. In Bangers Cats, Zuccarello is not that enticing to me. Definitely he's... yeah, he's one of those guys, right? He's not going to throw a ton of hits or get you a bunch of blocks. And he's mostly assists, so he's really only helping you out a whole ton in one category there in most cases. So overall, I'm not like, I can't say I'm through the roof about the player in Zuccarello. So that's my general take on Zuccarello. You know, he was back up with on the Kaprizov line with Marco Rossi in the last game. So that's obviously a good sign for him. I'm trying to think how much I really believe in Matt Zuccarello. I guess we should throw him in the sheet. Let's get the numbers. Let's let the numbers do some talking for us on the Zucchini Man. He's got just 2 assists his last 5, skating 20 minutes a night. That's pretty good. Shots per 60, individual scoring chances 4 per 60. Honestly, not bad for a guy like Zuccarello. The on-ice number is really good. Obviously, playing with Kaprizov can do that for you, and playing on a top power play. Yeah, I mean, overall, I'm just not excited about Zuccarello. There, maybe if like he is basically Nick Schmaltz. I feel like Nick Schmaltz and Matt Zuccarello feel very similar. Zuccarello, obviously, exposure to a better player in Kaprizov, better superstar in Kaprizov than Schmaltz has. Maybe that's an edge that you could give to Zuccarello right now. But again, how safe is he in that deployment? We've seen Boldy get that look on that top line for a good stretch as well. The Wild, one of these 4-game teams for next week. If he fits in on all your heavy nights, then you're getting the 4 games from him. And that feels pretty good. But yeah, you would have to be getting the 4 games, and he would have to be a distinct upgrade in my mind. If the off nights from Arizona help you more in that regard, then I wouldn't drop Schmaltz for him, because I do think the players are somewhat similar in terms of upside. And as far as McTavish goes, I'm really not into McTavish right now. I could throw him in the sheet right now as well, but it's hard to get excited about McTavish when he's putting up a bunch of zeros. The underlying metrics look like this: 345th in shots per 60. Just not doing a whole heck of a lot out there. Maybe still nursing some sort of injury at the moment. And we've got Trevor Zegras coming back. We could jump through. We've got a bunch of ducks on this Buzzling Players docket here. And while I may not know what a duck is, I think we should still talk about them. So let's do all that right now. Let's talk about McTavish. Let's talk about Terry, Zegras, and Vetrano. All these guys we can get through here. So yeah, my general take on McTavish is I'm not excited. I know he's, you know, getting to play a fair bit with guys like Terry and things like that. In the last game, he was playing with Vetrano and Strome. You know, could be worse. I'd rather him play with Terry, obviously. Terry, I still think, is by far the best player in Anaheim, but could be worse. Vetrano is definitely a guy who can shoot a ton of pucks and some will go in, so McTavish could run into some points that way. Overall, just not that excited on Mason McTavish. He hasn't shown a lot of signs of life. I feel like the points that he gets are just going to be by virtue of getting a bunch of minutes and Frank Vetrano bouncing some pucks off him from time to time. So overall, I'm not into McTavish as a pickup, really. If there's any other compelling options, I would go that route. Troy Terry, I still like. I'm never going to be able to quit Troy Terry. 19 and a half minutes average time on ice, 2 goals, 3 points in his last 5. 156 shots per 60, 298 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Not great. 142nd Corsi 4 per 60, 208 in scoring chances, 4 per 60. It's a 62-point pace on the season for Troy Terry, which is actually pretty good when you consider how incredibly cold he was at the start of the season. For him to get all the way back up here is pretty solid stuff, especially given the supporting cast or lack thereof in Anaheim. So I like Terry. Would like to hang on to him through this week. I don't know that he's playing over a lot of other players for you this week, which is why some people might be dropping him. And I do think that, yeah, like we've said a million times on the podcast over the last couple of weeks, you do need to be ruthless in your fantasy hockey playoffs, even if you like the guy, even if you've got some a strange emotional attachment to him, as I do with Troy Terry. You can absolutely drop him if there is something that's going to get you some games played, going to bring you closer to winning your matchup this week. I would not fault you for dropping Troy Terry. As far as it goes with Trevor Zegras, it sounds like he's getting pretty close. They were talking about even a game time decision for the game yesterday. So it seems like Zegras' return is imminent. And honestly, I would be fairly shocked if he doesn't come straight back into a fair amount of work. Maybe not the very first game, but like pretty soon he's going to be leaned on a fair bit because what they have right now is not working. So unless they're just going to bring him back and have him play like 13 minutes randomly, I would be kind of surprised if Zegras doesn't get a fair amount of work coming back. Like 18 plus minutes would be my expectation. I could obviously be pretty wrong on that and it wouldn't be the most shocking thing, but that's my expectation as a baseline at the moment. And so I do think that's a little bit exciting, especially if he gets on a line with Terry. I think a guy like Alex Killorn can make a lot of sense as a winger on that line. They've had some success running setups similar to that. So I'd be interested if something like that were to happen. Keep an eye out. That could happen. Zegras could be pretty interesting. You have the Sunday off night this Sunday for Anaheim, so you could look to add Zegras for that if he's available in your league. Frank Vetrano, just one goal in his last five, skating over 19 minutes a night, second in the league in shots per 60 over the last five while skating 19 plus a night. That's good stuff from Frank Vetrano. 21st in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. And this is where the teammate factor really comes in. 229 in Corsi, 4 per 60, 262 in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. Frank Vetrano getting absolutely no help whatsoever from any of his line mates. Now on pace for 35 goals and 59 points on the season. He's having a terrific season, and honestly, I feel like this is not that far off from what we might be able to expect from Frank Vetrano. It's regressed as of late, but overall, I think the numbers have dipped back down to where I kind of believe him as a 30 to 35 goal scorer and a 60-ish point guy in this current iteration, perhaps with like really great line mates. Like if you put him in Zuccarello's spot on the opposite wing of Kaprizov, like what would Frank Vetrano do in that spot? That'd be pretty interesting. Obviously, pretty hard to know the answer to that, but I bet it would be better than what's going on in Anaheim at the moment. Overall, I'm not really looking to move off of Vetrano. It's pretty hard to do so when the underlying metrics, the individual metrics, look this good. You know, maybe he's the guy who gets the Zegras bump. Zegras comes back, and instead of being weighed down by Mason McTavish, suddenly he's being buoyed by some life and energy from a guy like Trevor Zegras. That's definitely within the realm of possibility here, and I'd be mildly excited about that for Frank Vetrano. If you have to drop him before the weekend, I definitely wouldn't fault you for that, but I'd be interested to pick him back up, especially if we do get a look at some lines and he is with Zegras and not with McTavish moving forward. All right, back to some comments. Byron Starr in the chat, debating between adding either Liljegren or Hanifin. I know Riley's back, so just wondering. So Liljegren has been the guy in Toronto playing on the top power play unit for the last little bit, and they seem to be relatively happy with that, how it's going. They're probably just kind of saving Morgan Riley for the playoffs. I'd be kind of shocked if Liljegren was the guy in the playoffs, but for fantasy purposes, what do we care about the playoffs? We care about what's going on right now, and while it's working, Liljegren's going to stay there, so I do think that's a good look. Obviously, Hanifin just going to be on a good team, skate a bunch of minutes. He's not really going to be getting a ton of power play time. Shea Theodore is the clear top power play guy there, but Hanifin is getting a lot of even strength time, so that's obviously a good spot. I could throw these guys into a little comparison here for us. in the sheet. Hannah Finn versus Timothy Liljegren. Let's see if I can spell. There we go. 4 assists in the last 5 for Liljegren, playing almost 22 minutes a night, which is good stuff. Hannah Finn playing 22.5+. He's got 2 assists his last 5. Hannafin's underlying numbers a little bit better on the individual side, but a little bit worse on the on-ice side. Liljegren getting, obviously, a pretty big boost. 7th in Corsi 4 per 60 and 12th in scoring chances 4 per 60 amongst all defensemen in the last 5 games. Obviously getting that boost from the Leafs power play over this stretch of play. I think I'd take Liljegren at the moment, to be honest with you. Hannafin might be the safe play, but I'm looking for somebody to win me my week, not, you know, edge me towards my week, if that makes any sense. So I think I'd take Liljegren between the two at the moment. I don't see a reason for them to move off it unless he, you know, there's always a chance he makes, you know, some boneheaded play at the line and they decide to, Sheldon Keefe decides he's got to have the old reliable vet and Morgan Riley back there, even though Riley's been arguably not that reliable in some of these spots in the past. So that's obviously still a possibility, but I do think that there's some rhyme to the reason with Liljegren being this guy at the moment. I think they're just consciously taking minutes away from Riley at this point. So as long as he's semi-competent there, and he has been, then I think Liljegren hangs on to that. Jack Kane says, Nate got into fantasy hockey at the beginning of the seasons, and Apples and Junos has been my go-to podcast all year. Thanks to you, Blake, and the rest of the A&G team for all the great content. Appreciate the kind words, Jack. It's really one of the main reasons we do what we do is we've gotten some really good feedback and really kind feedback, I want to say. It's we've been very happy to be a part of the fantasy hockey community at large. All the content creators that we've, you know, collaborated with in the past year and even before that, basically everybody that I've ever reached out to or had any kind of conversation with, it seems like it's just full of great people. So I'm really happy with the fantasy hockey community and really happy, obviously, with all of our listeners and all of our patron members. Yeah, just a really great community. I feel very blessed to be able to talk into a microphone and we get thousands of listens, and it's yeah, it's just wild that people take us this seriously, to be honest with you, but we love to see it for sure. Toronto Dave throwing up the heart in the chat. Let's see you, buddy. All right, let's get back into it. I got to scroll back up. We wanted to talk about Roope Hintz. So Blake and I did talk about Roope Hintz in the flagship show. So that should be in your podcast feeds. It's up on YouTube. You can check that out. We talked about him in the have not section of the last show. So you can go check out our take on Roope Hintz as well. Overall, like you see, the underlying numbers are still pretty solid with Roope Hintz. 35th shots per 60, 56 individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 61st Corsi 4 per 60, 62nd scoring chances 4 per 60. I know the results have not been there as of late for Roope Hintz, but it's still the Pavelski, Hintz, Robertson top line. It's still the Pavelski, Hintz, Robertson, Ben top power play. The situation has not changed. His underlying stats look really solid. He's getting less minutes than you'd hope, so that's going to put a little bit of a ceiling on what his point potential could be. But I think there's also like every chance that Roope Hintz just kind of goes off this week and he ends up getting even more minutes because he's feeling it and that line's feeling it. I think that's well within the range of possibilities. I don't think he's like dogging it or anything. I don't think he's playing poorly. I think it's just a cold stretch. He's getting a little bit unlucky, and what better way to bump a cold streak than playing the San Jose Sharks on Tuesday night here? So I'm watching that game. I'm gonna call it right now, baby dry Roope Hintz 2 points against the Sharks on Tuesday night. You heard it here first, folks. All right, let's keep it rolling before I make too many hot takes on the podcast here. Joey Decord and Philip Grubauer, the Seattle tandem, was requested last week, requested again this week. Yeah, I mean, let's dig into it. It's been a wild ride, that is for sure. It seemed like Grubauer was taking away some starts. He had a good stretch of starts and then not so great stretch of starts. He was, well, not stretch of starts in the last game here on Sunday against Montreal. He allowed 4 goals on 6 shots before being pulled against Montreal. That is just brutal stuff. First 2 shots went in. didn't get better from there. And against a team like Montreal, that is tough to stomach. So it'll be very interesting to see what Seattle does this week. They got two games in a row against Anaheim, Tuesday, Thursday. Like, there's a chance that they just roll out Joey Decord for the next two games, three games even. And I'm like, man, we can't trust Grubauer because of this outing that he had. Decord obviously came into the game in relief. He did allow a goal, but he made 10 saves, so he definitely played better even in relief, which is a tough spot to be in. And he had a not-so-bad game against Arizona. The game before, it was two goals against on 26 shots, so that's not a terrible spot. You know, it's very, very hard to tell. Basically, I'd be looking very intently at who they start on Tuesday night. That would tell me who is going to get the two starts for the week. I think whoever gets the start on Tuesday will at least get one of the Thursday or Saturday starts. So if both are available in your league, I'd just be waiting for that Tuesday news to drop, and then I'd jump. If I had to hazard a guess right now, I do think that it would be Decord most likely to get the next two starts, just because of how bad that Grubauer outing was on Sunday. Jeff in the chat, Rupe's been killing me. Still riding him this week in the semis, though. Time on ice seemed low, which was a little concerning. Yeah, the time on ice is the most concerning part of the profile, but overall, I think that's just kind of a product of Dallas. The other lines have been rolling, so they deprioritize the top line a little bit. If the top line starts rolling pretty hard and Hintz gets a couple points against San Jose, then I think you could see it trend back the other way for a little bit. I'm not too concerned. If it grows to be a much more significant trend over a much longer period of time, then that would be more of a concern for me. All right, next up, Jonathan Drouin. This is an interesting one for sure. Four games played here, showing up on the sheet, and he's got 8 points in those four games, including a two-goal, one-assist outing in the last game against Pittsburgh on Sunday. Played 20 minutes, 47 seconds. The Colorado Avalanche do that. If you did not know, they absolutely play the bejesus out of their top players. And when you got a guy like Drouin who's playing on a top line, they kind of did a weird thing. So they did move around the top lines. So Drouin split time between the Rantanen McKinnon line and the Lehkonen Mittelstadt line in the last game. I'd have to dig a little bit deeper to see which way they started and which way they finished. But regardless, he's still on the top power play, which is obviously a terrific spot to be in. The on-ice numbers look amazing for Drouin. 20th in Corsi 4 per 60, 24th on-ice scoring chances 4 per 60. And quite honestly, like, the individual numbers, not bad. 154th in shots per 60, 72nd in individual scoring chances 4 per 60 for Jonathan Drouin. On pace now for 17 goals, 55 points on the season. It's a hot streak, right? It's the playoffs. You need people on hot streaks too. I'm okay to ride with it for a while, but if there's a change in deployment, if there's any kind of sign that he's fallen off the train a little bit here, then I would also not hesitate to drop Jonathan Drouin as fast as I picked him up. So very volatile player in my mind. I don't mind trying to stay in the flames with a stream here, but I also would be treating it very, very carefully. Toronto Dave says Hyman having a season, pop 50. Yeah, three players so far with 50 goals on the season. Hyman, Reinhardt, and then Matthews. I think everybody expected Matthews. I'm not sure how many expected Hyman and Sam Reinhardt this year. Amon asks, yo, my guy, do I keep Lehkonen or Drouin? Points league can only keep one of them. That is a really tough call. At the moment, just based on deployment, I don't know how you go against Drouin. Lehkonen playing on the second line with Mittelstadt, and then either Drouin or Nichushkin, and then playing on a second power play unit. It's just going to be tough for Lehkonen to keep pace from that deployment. So I think you got to keep Drouin at the moment if those are your two options. It could flip, and that's just the chance you're running with Colorado at the moment. I mean, if you want to check lines before tomorrow's game, right? They're playing here they're playing the Canadiens on Tuesday. If you want to check lines the morning of and make your decision then, maybe that's the way to do it, unless you got to make an ad here tonight or make a drop here tonight to bring somebody off of IR or whatever the case may be. If you can, I would wait till tomorrow and try to get a look at the lines and see if anything's going to change for that game. But if it is the way that it is and Drouin's the one on top power play over Lehkonen, I think you got to stick with the deployment. All right. Evander Kane is next on the list. One assist his last four games. He got a maintenance day in the back half of back-to-back in on the Sunday here. Still 45th in shots per 60, 66th individual scoring chances for per 60. Good numbers there. 135th Corsi for per 60 and 66th in on ice scoring chances for per 60. Kane has been disappointing managers for a fair bit. It seems like he's having a tough time just consistently staying in the top six this year. He hasn't had a goal, and this is too many games for me to count live on the air. Everyone would be extremely bored if I tried to do that. Deployment's been all over the place. He's played anywhere between 21 minutes and 13:39 over this stretch of goalless play. It's hard to move off of Kane, especially in bangers formats, but it's also a spot where now you know he's a little bit banged up. Are they really going to prioritize him into the top six knowing that, give him more minutes? That's a tough ask. Is he going to hit as much given that he's a little bit banged up? That's a tough question to answer as well. And are you really going to be playing him this week when the Oilers play Winnipeg and LA and Anaheim on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, all heavy nights? Is Kane actually cracking your starting lineup is the third question. So a lot of strikes against Kane at the moment. I mean, you can drop Kane. I do think that there's a really solid chance that Kane is pretty entrenched as a really good option after this week, like basically for the rest of the fantasy hockey playoffs, especially if you play in week 26, not just next week, but the week after, like all the way to the end of the NHL regular season, basically, then the Edmonton Oilers schedule is really solid and Evander Kane will probably be one of the priority ads out on your waiver wire. But that can't really influence too much what you're deciding to do for this week to maximize your chances of winning this week. And so if Kane is that guy who's going to be riding the pine this week and you do have an option to move off, even if it's for just a really good goalie stream that you find somewhere in the week, then I wouldn't hesitate to do that. All right, we've already talked about Troy Terry. We've already talked about Trevor Zegras. Let's talk about Brad Marchand. Four assists in his last five games here, averaging about 18:45 a night through this stretch. The Boston Bruins have been mixing up the lines a little bit. So in the last game, it was Marchand, Coyle, DeBrusque. That's an interesting setup that leaves Pasternak to skate with Zacha and Danton Heinen. Obviously, Marchand's still on the top power play. I don't think anybody's coming for that deployment anytime soon. We did get practice lines, and the practice lines were the same. So it is Marchand, Coyle, DeBrusque, and that's what you should expect to see Tuesday when they play again. I can't see doing anything with Marchand, to be quite honest with you. Shots per 60, 212. Individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 179. On ice Corsi for 233, on ice scoring chances for 138. It's not great. It's not where you want it to be for sure. But overall, I can't imagine that there's really somebody out there, especially if you have a spot for Marchand on Tuesday, you're getting the Wednesday off night. That's a good thing for your lineup, and that's going to free up somebody on your Thursday heavy night. Marchand is just a good thing for your lineup right now, and I don't think that he's playing too poorly to consider dropping him even beyond this. Like, I'm struggling to think who in most of my leagues that I'd be playing over Marchand, even in like a shallower league. It would be hard for me to find somebody. I'm just really struggling to think about who I'm gonna play him below come Saturday when you're already sitting there with a lot of players that are probably going to be streamer level that you played early in the week, like Buffalo guys like Jordan Greenway. Not playing him over Brad Marchand. Are you playing any of these other random streamers that you picked up through the week over Brad Marchand? Probably not. So I think Brad Marchand is a hold. Charlie McAvoy is a little bit more interesting. He's the next player up here. He's got 0 points his last five. I'm going to check this because he has 0 points going back a long way. I gotta see how far back this one really goes with Charlie McAvoy, because he has been on my radar as a have-not for quite some time. This goes way back. This is a 10-game pointless streak for Charlie McAvoy. The shots have really fallen off. He's way down the list in terms of defenseman shots. The on-ice numbers are respectable, well, barely respectable, I guess you would say. Really not great stuff from McAvoy overall. Still pacing for 54 points on the season, but getting some heavy regression, and well-deserved because he has not been playing all that well by the metrics. So that is a tough spot. Again, it's a hard spot to say, like, who are you picking up who has the deployment where he could just pop off, even if he's not playing well, he could just pop off on the power play and run into, like, four assists in a random night. That's well within the range of outcomes here. They play Florida, Tampa Bay, and then Washington this week. It's not the greatest setup, but it's also not the worst week that I've ever seen. You know, if somebody were to come to me, hit me up and give me who you would actually be looking to add, like, say you play McAvoy for Tuesday, Wednesday, and then you really don't want to play him, hang on to him till the Saturday, who would you realistically be moving on from McAvoy for? If you're going to just say, like, a few random goalie streams, unless it's like a really great goalie stream, I don't know that I'm really inclined to do that. The one thing that does work in favor of a drop is that Boston only plays 3 games, 0 off nights next week as well. And that's Nashville, Carolina, Florida, which are all pretty solid teams. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you can't drop Charlie McAvoy. I'm saying it would have to be a fairly compelling reason why. I don't think that McAvoy is a guy that I'm dropping for Jordan Greenway, for example. All right, let's get back to some comments. Jeff said, I dropped Lekkonen for Drouin this week, YOLOing. Good stuff. Let's see how it goes. Hopefully that works out. Monson, thank you for answering the question about Lekkonen versus Drouin. By far the best source for all things hockey fantasy. Appreciate you. And Lenny says, in semis right now, have Freddie Anderson and someone dropped Kochetkov. Is it worth making a waiver claim and holding the tandem rest of the way? My other goalie is Hill, who is out now. It's an interesting spot. If you're in a Cats league and you need to make some goalie minimums, then you are going to have to really think about picking up a goalie here. I think that if the recent kind of one-off goalie system holds in Carolina, basically they've been playing Kochetkov, then Anderson, then Kochetkov, then Anderson, just going back and forth, ping-ponging it back and forth this whole time. True tandem situation. If that holds, then Kochetkov would get the 2 starts this week. So I'm not sure when or if he comes off waivers or how that works in your specific league, but if Kochetkov does come off waivers on or before tomorrow, the 26th, Tuesday, and you can get him in and he does get the start for the Tuesday game against Pittsburgh, and then he also gets the Saturday against Montreal, that's a pretty enticing pickup just for a week. So I would intend entertain that pickup for that week, and then I might honestly drop him after that, even if I did pick him up. Let's look at Carolina's schedule. Yeah, the following week, Carolina only plays 3 games, so I think I'd probably drop Kochetkov after that, but assuming that Kochetkov, the tandem system does hold and Kochetkov does get Tuesday start, yeah, I don't hate picking up Kochetkov, especially with those two opponents, the way that they're playing. I think I'd be pretty into that. Michael Radziwon asks, will Creamer win the Listeners Yahoo League? I have the ability to see this. I don't know if everybody in the Listener League knows, but I do have a co-manager situation where I can just kind of see. I haven't touched anything in there all year, but I can see Blake's team and I can see how things are going. He did finish first, which is just terrible. I'm sure he's lording that over everyone. He's got a solid team, I will say. It's a strong bet. I don't know what the odds are, what the betting odds are in the league, but I think he's got to be the odds on favorite for sure. Some interesting streamer choices, but I'll leave it at that. I can't give Blake too much credit when he's not here. You know, I just can't do it. Can't bring myself to do it. All right, let's keep rolling. Let's talk about Philip Kurashev. 2 goals, 6 points in his last five, 19 minutes average time on ice. On ice metrics are okay. 132nd, Corsi 4 per 60, 43rd, scoring chances 4 per 60. That's all right, but as per Philip Kurashev's usual, 243rd shots per 60, 184th individual scoring chances 4 per 60. It's not great. It never will be for Philip Kurashev. I just don't think he's that dude. They did kind of mix up the lines a little bit, which is my major concern right now. They played a Foligno Dickinson Bedard line a fair bit. They also played a Tyler Johnson Kurashev Bedard line. So that's really what I want to be monitoring over the next little bit. I don't know if we've got an update in practice lines from today. It looks like we do. It looks like it was Donato Bedard Kurashev in practice today. That's good. Basically, you need that exposure. Philip Kurashev is not interesting in his own. He has to be playing with Bedard for me to have any interest in him whatsoever, regardless of how many points he scored in the last little bit. Kurashev is interesting, but again, it's a Chicago situation where there's not much benefit to rostering a Chicago player this week. It's not a good schedule for them. You're not going to get extra games played. They play Calgary, Ottawa, Philadelphia this week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, all on heavy nights. I believe, if I remember correctly, they do not have a great schedule next week either. Yeah, they play Tuesday, Saturday, Sunday, which, I mean, it could be worse, but it could be better. If you hold them through the Tuesday, are you really hanging on through 3 days without a game to get to the Saturday, Sunday? I feel like that's probably not a play that most people are going to make. I think Kurashev is probably a drop for a lot of people this week, especially if he's just going to be warming your bench. Richard asked, does Suter get a bump with Lindholm out? I think Suter kind of already had that bump, to be honest with you. I think he was playing above him in the lineup. Lindholm was really just being a 3C. But they did in the warm-up. I just saw this now. It actually just came through not that long ago. It looks like Suter is centering what amounts to the fourth line with Vasily Podkolzin and Nils Åman. That's not a great spot to be. That's not what we wanted to see for sure. But we'll have to see. There's still the power play question. Is he still on the top power play? We'll just have to see. Basically, I have Suter in a couple places because, there's not a lot to pick from there. It looked like he had the Miller-Besser deployment. That's going to PDG right now. So if that's your situation moving forward, then maybe, Giuseppe becomes a little bit more interesting to you. I don't know if that's going to hold either. That's up for debate as well. I'm really curious about the power play, but I think I'm very likely to be moving on from Suter after this one game here tonight. Hopefully he manages to get something for us this as a stream for this Monday, but there's a pretty good chance that I am moving on from him just because it's hard to hold on, especially through a Thursday. If you're not going to be playing him, are you going to hang on to him for five nights where he's not doing anything for you? He could be that roster spot that you need to open up and just, stream some goalies or whatever you need to do to get some games played, get some points this week. So that's my approach with Suter at the moment. We already talked about Vetrano, so let's talk about Jake Ottinger. Ottinger and Wedgwood have been the combo there. Lately, it's been all Ottinger, and it has been all pretty good. He's won his last three starts. He's allowed only 2 goals in each of those last three starts. He hasn't had to face a ton of shots. The most shots he's had to face in any of those games was 28. The least was 22, so fairly consistent. Dallas, obviously a great team. He's gonna have a pretty solid setup in front of him most nights. So I think I'm just kind of riding it out with Ottinger at the moment. It hasn't been a great season for sure. I mean, everybody tried to tell me what a sure thing Jake Ottinger was this year, and yet here we are going into week 24, and Jake Ottinger has an .898 save percentage on the season for a terrific team in the Dallas Stars. So goalies, they'll do that to you. So, but at the moment, if you got Ottinger on the roster, I think you're holding. I think he's playing pretty well. I don't see really any reason to be doing anything different than just running Ottinger out there night after night at the moment. Shabbat is the last player that was requested that got some love in the Apples and Jews Discord server, which, if you haven't already joined, check the link in the description. You can join the Apples and Jews Discord server and start chatting with, like, I think we're up to 1,100-ish members at the moment. So join in there, talk some fantasy hockey playoffs, bemoan your losses, and celebrate your wins with us. That's what we're all doing at this point in the season. Shabbat here, though, 2 goals, 5 points in his last 5 games, 21 and a half minutes average time on ice. Obviously, that looks all right for Thomas Shabbat. 39th shots per 60, 36th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, 127 in Corsi 4 per 60, and 40th in on-ice scoring chances, 4 per 60. He's not been getting top power play. That's been Chychrun and Sanderson. So it's been a two-defense top power play unit for Ottawa as of late, and Shabbat has not been a part of that. So obviously, that's not great. But Shabbat has been producing regardless, which is pretty good. So on the season, pacing for 15 goals, 52 points. I feel like the 52-point pace is right about where we expect Shabbat to be. That might feel a little bit aggressive. He does have an 11.6% on ice shooting percentage on the season, which is pretty high. And definitely this last little stretch, he's not playing anywhere near like the 26 plus minutes that he used to play back when the Senators had no defenseman other than Thomas Shabbat to play. I mean, Shabbat is a fine defenseman. I think that he's decently valuable. Do I think that he's going to continue some point per game play without the top power play exposure? No, I do not. I think that Shabbat is a fine third or fourth defenseman on most fantasy rosters in most formats. I just think he's a relatively unexciting player, and it wouldn't shock me if he went through a bit of a cold stretch over the next little bit. The metrics are fine. I'm not like predicting that because of metrics. I'm just saying that, you know, I don't think this recent stretch of play is anything to get too excited about, unless really the deployment changes and he gets a lot more top power play time and just more time in general in order to run into some more points. So Shabbat, just a little bit ho-hum, not too excited one way or the other. All right, I think we made it to the end of the list. Let's do a brief check-in with the score. We've got a 1-0 Vegas lead at the moment. Let's see who scored the goal. It's Pavel Dorofiev, because of course it is. Anthony Mantha with an assist and Zach Whitecloud with the other. So that's obviously helping everyone who streamed those guys. I mean, I guess some people might have streamed in a Mantha, perhaps, maybe. But yeah, overall, not too much to get excited about. I mean, I can't say anything. I streamed in Keegan Kolesar, and I streamed in Nicolas Roy in a spot. Yeah, I can't really say anything, can I? I'm a little bit of a hypocrite in that regard. Either way, I think we've reached the end of our time together. So that's going to be all that I've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value. Hope to get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. And that's it, folks. Much love.